So I quickly opened the wardrobe, pulled out some jeans and a t-shirt that seemed clean, topped it off with a pair of old shoes that were ripped around the seams. And I thought, these shoes just don't suit me. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything's right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so inviting. Oh, shut up.
Welcome back to Diet Smart Talk with Steve-O. You're listening to News Talk, WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5. It all starts with the shoes.
You bet.
Literally and figuratively, it's the foundation of, you know, the modern day human experience.
Sure.
Footwear is the key. And with that, let's welcome our first guest. We have Mike Rancourt here. He is the co-owner of Rancourt & Company, Master Shoe Crafters. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
I definitely want to talk about the business and your relationship as a supplier for the Olympics and the history of your family. But why don't we start with the early years? How did your family end up working in the shoemaking business? And are you guys still based in Lewiston, Auburn area?
Yeah, still in Lewiston.
So talk about, did you grow up in Maine? How did you get involved? And we'll talk kind of, you know, bring it up to speed with what's going on right now with the Olympic apparel.
So born in Lewiston and stayed in Lewiston. And so my dad is a Canadian immigrant, ended up in central Maine, so Lewiston, Auburn, Freeport area. And as most Canadians did when they came to the States, they were looking for work.
Is Rancourt French-Canadian?
Yeah, French-Canadian.
Who's the guy who sings the song Rene for the Bruins?
Rene Rancourt.
He is famous with the Bruins. Any relation?
Funny story there, but my wife has Rancourt in her family line as well, and that is a cousin of my wife, but no relationship to me.
Do you get Bruins tickets? More importantly than the family thing. Do you, any way you get like on the glass?
No,
nothing?
I think really far removed as far as cousin goes.
Or if you showed up and you said, I am Rancourt, they would let you sing.
Yeah, we tried that before, and we showed up and said, hey, Rene, what about some tickets? And he just said, I don't know who you guys are. So
yeah. I mean, the derivative of my last name, Woods, the only person of note was Rosemary Woods, who was Richard Nixon's secretary. She's the one that erased 37 minutes of tape. So I used to get that a lot in the 70s. Hey, is Rosemary Woods related to you? And I'm like, no, she was like, you know, kind of a crook. Yeah. So anyhow, your family started in the shoemaking business. How does that start?
Yeah, so my dad learned how to hand sew. So when you're thinking of hand sewing, it's loafers. And back in the 50s, you know, Lewiston, Auburn and that Freeport area was really the hub for authentically hand-sewn shoes. And so my dad learned how to hand-sew. And then over time, he left the company he was working for and then joined a smaller company in Lewiston called Marchant Moccasin. And over time, that gentleman retired and wanted to sell off the two parts of his business. And my dad ended up buying the hand-sewn part in 1967.
Wow. Well, I grew up in a little town outside of Boston, and for some reason that may be just particular and peculiar to me, shoe buying was this ritualistic thing as a kid. You know, part of it was back to school and I think Easter. And if I needed footwear any time other than Easter and going back to school, my mom was like, no new shoes for you. So I used to wear like hush puppies. Are those still a thing? Do you remember Hush Puppies?
Yeah,
or am
sure.
I imagining
no,
Hush Puppies?
Absolutely. Still around. The company's still around. They still make Hush Puppies.
Yeah. And where I grew up in my little town, there were like three or four little shoe companies. And it would always have like, you know, these older people that just own the little shoe company. And every year in like last week in August, you know, you'd show up and then they'd put that little metal shoe sizing thing. They'd pinch your toes. They'd, okay, stand up, put your heel back. And it was like this, there's something about footwear. And people say, Deb, and I know you know because Deb goes to a lot of galas. She's friends with the, you know, I was going to say the ruling class of Maine, but she's friends with Paula Page and friends with a lot of the big shakers. So, Deb, you go to a lot of galas, right?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of red carpet.
Yes.
It starts with the footwear. All the great designers and all the great fashionista people, you know, you can have the greatest outfit and the jewelry, but if your foundation isn't solid, and that's something that I lack. I mean, I love footwear. But by the way, we talked earlier with Mike, and I mentioned I had size 14. And as a professional shoemaker, shoe crafter, he kind of shook his head a little bit, like 14, like, okay, Sasquatch. So I'm kidding. He mentioned that you actually carry, you know, 14.
We do.
So the family business. So tell me how the family business evolved and, you know, your decision to stay here in Maine and stay in this business as opposed to leave. And then we'll bring it up to speed on what the business is doing now. And then we'll talk about the Olympics.
So my father started, again, in 67, and you know, it was an interesting place for me to walk into as a young boy, because if you've ever seen, you know, hand-sewn shoes being crafted, it's a very quiet environment. So, you know, the hand sewers are using threads and needles and pulling through the
tip. So they use templates for sizes, and then after that, it's mostly just hand stitching.
Yeah, it's a form called a last. So it's basically it's the shape of your foot, and they're graded to size. So as you discussed, you mentioned that you're size 14. So we go all the way down to on a men's a five and a half, and then you know five and a half, six and a half, and seven, and so on. And so then the patterns are cut of the upper, the leather, to match the last.
Got it. Yeah, I don't want to digress, but that's also almost a staple of this show. Why is it that U.S. shoe sizes versus whether it's Imperial or you know, and it's almost like the whole metric thing, but it's particular. I've shopped for shoes in Australia, New Zealand. I was just over in China. I don't think I bought shoes. They don't make size 14 in China.
They don't.
No. Again, I had like the biggest foot in the whole country, the whole continent. But yeah, when you're buying shoes, it's always, you know, U.S. shoe, the conversion.
Right.
And I remember in third grade, Miss Petrowski told me and every other third grader, this is back in 1967, 8, that we had to learn metric because it was imperative because the whole world was going to metric. And she lied. And not intentionally, but Miss Petrowski lied. And the only way metric really shows up now in the U.S. is in soda. You can get a 2-liter bottle of Coke.
That's right.
The only people that listened to Miss Petrowski were the soda companies. Everything else is gallons. And with shoe sizes, you know, I don't know why the whole world can't come up with one standard. And there's no real question there other than when you buy footwear, it's always like the U.S.
I will comment on this, though, that American sizing is a better fit than European sizing because there's no half sizes in Europe. So it's a full size. And so then you're trying to squeeze your foot into something that really doesn't fit properly. So American
sizing. But why wouldn't they have half? I mean, it's about incremental size. Right. It's not about what the number is. It's all relative, right? So another thing the Europeans get wrong. Wow. See, this is we're creating international news here with Mike. So then talk about where the business after you joined it, how it's shifted, and then at one point you grew and became part of Cole-Haan.
So my father was a contract manufacturer, which then I became as well. So contract means we're making for other brands. And my father was making for Quadi at the time, and they became his largest customer. And then when you're in that situation, sooner or later you find yourself having to either sell to them or they'll leave, and then you become smaller. So he decided to sell the Quadi, and he stayed with them for a number of years. And then as they got larger and started to open factories offshore, he decided to leave. And that's when I joined him in 1982. And so we started our own company called Downey's Footwear. And then if we fast forward, Cole-Haan became our largest customer. Again, we were a contract manufacturer. And Cole-Haan became our largest manufacturer, our customer, sorry. And then we sold to them. And my father retired, and I stayed on with them for 4 years.
Somewhere between the transactions of selling the various shoe businesses, was there any consideration to selling to Berkshire Hathaway and taking stock instead of money? And you know what I'm referring to. You know what I'm referring to. And it is part of legend and mythology.
That's right.
That Mr. Alphont of Dexter Shoe at one point with Warren Buffett, who still claims that his purchase of Dexter was the unequivocal worst purchase of his life.
Yeah, he still says that.
Not only because he didn't understand the category or the international nature, but he made it a stock purchase instead of cash,
right, exactly.
And it turned into a multiple of billions of dollars, which I think the Alphon family continue to be quite happy with, and they do good work as the foundation. But how did he stumble upon that? And between you and your dad, it was like, did anyone ever say, hey, listen, this Warren Buffett could give us $1 billion, and, you know.
So when you're generating hundreds of millions of revenue like Dexter, and then you're only generating a couple millions like the Rancourts, Warren Buffett does.
Different
really,
scale.
Totally different scale.
Boy, I would have gone right to Warren Buffett. The moment the Dexter thing sold, I would have been like, hey, Warren, we will give you, do we have a deal for you? And I kid.
Well, Kohan gave us that deal, so we didn't need Warren.
So tell me about the Kohan relationship. Boy, I love Kohan shoes.
Yeah, so do we. Yeah, it was, for me, it was really cutting my teeth in the shoe world because my father was a moccasin maker, and we became shoemakers once we joined Kohan. So we learned a lot about different styles and construction, and it was a great relationship with them for 4 years. But then again, they started expanding, and they want to open facilities around the world, and so I decided to leave and start up another venture with my wife.
What is it about Maine? We talked about Dexter, and I think there have been a couple other companies that have been, you know, as a state, have produced some shoe companies and footwear companies. Yeah. Is it a labor force, a trained labor force, something about textile mills early on, maybe being hydropower? I know that a lot of our mill work requires a lot of energy. But what was it that made footwear and shoes somewhat indigenous and specific to Maine?
It was a labor force. So, you know, the Canadian immigrants, you know, coming to our state and looking for jobs. So there was a lot of, you know, valuable labor available in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And I think that was the difference. And, you know, in shoemaking, there's a lot of processes and requires lots of hands. And so I think that's the difference versus Massachusetts started to lose their labor force for that highly intensive work in the 60s. And they shifted their business over to their factories over to Maine. And that's what you saw.
Interesting. The interesting thing to me about also about the shoe business is I've worked in consumer marketing. I've worked for Coca-Cola, Miller Brewing Company, and here at Tide Smart, we work with dozens of clients in every business category. But the thing that feels unique and specific to the shoe business is that, you know, let's just look at here in the U.S., virtually every single human being in the U.S., you know, which is a finite number and it's constantly changing and growing, but everyone needs shoes.
Right.
And there has to be some sort of industry metric that when you go to annual conventions and there's, you know, I'm sure there's a think tank and there's a university that has a shoe department of higher education and shoemaking, but there's a certain multiple of how many pairs of shoes people have at any given point. And whether it's kids growing into new sizes, I'm sure there's a mathematical formula where there's a universe of how many shoes. And no matter what you do, unlike some categories of business where, as an example with ice cream, like the Ben and Jerry's people, there's an unlimited growth in ice cream if you can just convince people that it's tasty enough, right? Because, and that's been my problem historically with donuts and ice cream, is I've succumbed to the idea of, like, I can just eat more of it. But with shoes, you know, I wear a pair of shoes, which I love, and I have, like, three or four dress or day pair of shoes, and then two or three sneakers or casual footwear, and there's kind of a limit to the number of shoes. So whether I see a nice shoe, if I
there's no limit to shoes, guys.
The ladies are chirping in now.
Oh, I was waiting for Debbie to.
I know. So what's your shoe? Unlimited? Do you have Paris Hilton kind of shoe?
I had a whole closet devoted to shoes. Until about 10 years ago.
Are you the long-lost Kardashian sister?
Maybe.
Are you part of the Kardashian
maybe.
Group?
Maybe. Emily, what about you?
How many shoes do you have?
If I could have a closet full of shoes, I would in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we love shoes.
Why?
I don't know. They're like jewelry, you know?
Well, for me, clothes size change all the time, and women are always so conscious about what size clothing they're wearing. But with shoes, I think it's a little bit different. Like, your foot size doesn't really change throughout your life, at least not much. So you can always have a new pair of shoes. That's or always true. Wear the same shoes other people are wearing.
I love a Merrill. I love a good Merrill. Are you familiar with the Merrill brand?
Sure.
And part of it is they're slip-on. And part of it is I'm lazy. So you add a slip. So going down and tying shoes and figuring out the whole shoelace thing, these babies right here, and again, now that we've met, I am going to add Rancourt shoes to the portfolio.
Yes.
But for the last few years, I will order three pair of these and then just move them in and out of rotation because they're all slip-on, right? But according to in this, there's probably is some gender differentiation. Does Rancourt make shoes and footwear for men and women?
Primarily men's. We have a small collection for women's.
But you're missing out, obviously. Yeah. The guys like me are like, I'm sorry, Mike. I'm going to wear two or three pair, and if you make it into my rotation, I'll be loyal.
But guys are easy because it's black, brown, and tan, and a burgundy. Woman is way more complicated.
Oh, there's height, there's size,
exactly.
there's
color, bigger market.
Right, there's heels. It's exactly right. But that's why most shoemakers around the world concentrate on women's shoe business.
God, what was that? I was obviously a big fan of Sex and the City. I mean, Carrie and her friends.
Well, sure.
And what were they, Mont Blanc? Or she always referred to like a shoe that whenever something happened with the ladies in Sex and the City.
I can't remember which one it was.
It has the red sole.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the red sole. So whenever something happened, definitely. They went through a breakup. They get fired from their job. Something happened. And it's like, Mont Blanc is a pen, so it's not that. But it's something like that. But whenever something horrible went in their lives, it's like, oh, we've got to get some Montblanc shoes. And when they have the red thing in the bottom, Deb is furiously looking online to find out the famous
Manola.
Louis Vuitton?
No, Manola. No,
Manola Blanc. Anyways.
Manolas. Yes.
Yeah. Right? Sarah Jessica's favorite shoe was Manola.
As a shoemaker, Manolas. I should know that. But
there
I
you go. Totally
but it's not your category. It's not your category. So my hypothesis, particularly with men, by the way, we have shoe expert, co-owner of Rancourt & Company, a Maine-based company. Their website is rancourtandcompany.com. If the biggest part of your catalog are men, and guys like me only have a is that accurate? I mean, so when you look at the market, it's hard to expand the market because it's a finite number. You take the number of people, the number of men, you multiply times four, and so you have to kind of take – you have to cannibalize some other shoe company, or is the shoe business growing, or are people like me just dinosaurs and young people want 10 shoes and guys want 10 or 15 shoes for different occasions?
So we have one customer that sent us a picture of his shoe collection from his closet, and he had 17 pairs of Rancourt shoes, all different colors.
Wow.
An investment banker, and so his shoes matched his dress for the day. So that's the kind of customer we get. So from...
See, the whole tie, shirt, suit,
that's
pants
exactly
thing.
Right.
Belt.
Exactly,
I'm not that
belt
guy.
Belt matches.
I'm not that guy. My Levi's, in fact, these here, I go on a three-day rotation. So I've got Levi's. I shouldn't say that. It's probably,
you say that.
There's probably a personal hygiene issue somewhere there. But yeah, I just slip on shoes and I just grab a shirt. But I'm not that guy. I'm not the guy that, the belt test, and then if I wear suspenders, I got to do this. Yeah. But there are people out there like that.
I mean, our customer is that guy who's buying a belt to match his shoes, and now the watch band to match his belt. And so that's our guy.
Yeah, I'm the guy.
You're not our guy, obviously.
I'm the guy that, depending on weight gain or loss, I bring out the Stanley drill, and I drill new holes in my belt. About a week ago, I had to drill a hole. I actually lost a little weight. And so I'm not the guy that goes, oh, man, I got to go buy a new belt. And boy, where am I going to go, Mont Blanc or Manola? No, I break out the Stanley and Decker, and it's like you go high-speed titanium drill bit, and you go right through the leather.
Wow.
Yeah, too much information, you think, for our listeners? They're going, what? Talk a little bit about the specific shoes at Rancourt. Are they more dress shoes and casual? I've been on the website. You've become a supplier with Ralph Lauren and the Olympic apparel, which I want to specifically talk about.
Right.
But your day-to-day line, what category would you classify that?
So I would say from casual, because we make an all-leather sneaker, to dress shoes. We make very traditional brogues or wingtips. So calf leather to side leather to cordovan. So I mean, the way we approach our market is that we're trying to outfit that gentleman from casual wear all the way to dress wear.
Right. And so I'm out of the demo. You're looking at my jeans and my shirt, and the Rancourt
right.
gentleman
right.
as opposed to, you know, me being the goofball who drills his belts and goes to supercuts, I would be a little outside of the demo. How about the price
first
point?
Off, your
I don't
size,
even know. I can't even afford your shoes.
You're sure. a size 14, so that makes you, that puts you on the
extreme. I'm an outlier?
You're an outlier.
Okay.
Price points from $250 roughly all the way up to $700 a pair.
$250 is the basement.
Is the basement, yeah.
Wow. I had a funny question, or maybe it's only funny to me. Why don't you guys charge more for bigger shoes? Generally, the price point for size 14, it's more cow.
Yeah.
It's more leather.
Yeah, it is.
It's more work, more
it
stitching.
Is.
And so, in some ways, I'm getting
about... Are you willing to pay more money? Is that what you...
I can't afford your shoes. I'm saying, I'm hoping somebody gives me a gift of shoes, Deb.
Oh, yes.
My birthday is July 27th.
That's right, it is.
How about a tasteful gift?
We will see.
On the upper end of the range,
on
I think would be appropriate.
End.
And they may have to start production now.
They may.
But why? How can a person buy a size 14 at the same price point as a guy buying size 9 or your 5.5 guy? It's like, in some ways, I'm being the Bigfoot. I get the bargain.
Right, you do get the bargain. And then a size 5.5 is really the guy who's screwed on this deal because he's paying full price.
He's got other hurdles. he probably has other challenges. But,
So we use averages in all of our yields. So if we use just a size 14, we would obviously overcharge for most of the shoes.
Talk about distribution, because I think it's fascinating in terms of, so all your product is made here in Maine?
Everything's made in Maine. We source most of our raw materials in the United States, but also from Europe, especially calf. So the way that, our revenue breaks out, we sell via direct consumer via the internet, which is Rancourt Brands. And then we also have our own wholesale brand. So, and our largest customer would be Brooks Brothers. And then we have the
contracts. I was at a Brooks Brothers yesterday. I was at 75 State Street in Boston.
Really?
Do you know where that is?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I was there yesterday, and here's another funny story. We've got Mike Rancourt here. They have a parking garage there, and I had a meeting in the building next door, and I was only in the meeting for an hour. But next to the parking garage at 75 State Street is a Brooks Brothers in the lobby.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and it was like that scene in Pretty Woman. The early scene where she walked in and they kind of like, turn the nose up.
Oh, no.
And they're like, sir, can we help you? Or are you lost?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, no, I'm looking at your Brooks Brothers stuff. And it's like this marble atrium and it's so fancy. And Deb, supercuts.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Sam's Club.
Yeah.
Not even the stuff on the shelf, the stuff on the open table at Sam's Club.
Right, exactly.
Oh, that's where you get the bargains. So I'm at Brooks Brothers yesterday, and I'm sure I would have gravitated to the Rancourt shoes, the fine footwear you guys produce. And the guy at Brooks Brothers made me feel so bad that it was like, oh, okay, I'm going to go to Dunkin' Donuts next door. And I walked out of Brooks Brothers. Where else do you guys distribute that I won't feel so shunned?
Well, then we have a lot of specialty shops in, larger cities. Such
Joseph,
as New York.
Joseph Banks, you guys in there?
No, not Joseph. We sell to David Woods.
Wow, yeah. He's a fancy clothing guy, too.
So he's a specialty retailer, and so that's the bulk of our business is with the specialty retailers who...
So as you said, and you alluded to it casually, but it sounds like a brand positioning statement, you market more towards gentlemen.
Towards gentlemen, yes.
Gentlemen.
Yeah.
So there is an implication there. There's an implied kind of, the fine clothing gentleman as opposed to the
same. But there's no reason why you can't be categorized as a gentleman. That's,
come on. We've known each other now for like 20 minutes. And I think we're both, I'm self-aware enough, and you, now that you've met me, you're probably aware also.
So, yeah, but I don't believe anything you're telling me. So I think all of this stuff you're saying is you really have great belts, and you have a closet full of shoes.
I am really the, you know, I will show you the holes drilled in my belt, and you've seen my Merrells. I've got a whole fleet of Merrells, and you know what I do for winter wear between Labor Day and Memorial Day, and we just passed that period. I will get 12 black turtlenecks from Bean. And every year, my wife knows in July, I order a fleet of turtlenecks. And so I just go jeans, turtlenecks, and, you know, and simple footwear. And I don't know. I've never, the whole gentleman thing, I, every once in a while I have to dress up and go somewhere, but I feel like a poser.
But you look good.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd like to hear that from somebody that I'm not paying to say that. If I could get somebody not on the payroll to say I look good, that would be, that happened like 25 years ago. By the way, we have Mike Radcourt here. He's co-owner of Radcourt & Company Shoe Crafters, based here in Maine, Lewiston, Auburn. So at your shop right now, are all the footwear still hand sewn, or there, if sewing technology evolved where some of the production, some of the sole production is done on machines?
So we've stayed very traditional in the way that we make our shoes. And we still hand sew the way that has been done for over 100 years. And then we hand stain and hand finish. And so
your employees, it's like an artisan shop.
Yeah,
I'm guessing that
a little bigger than an artisan shop, but
You have people that are they're craftspeople that they understand leather, they understand
finishing and quality and, you know, at our price point. So
Well, let's talk about how you became affiliated with Ralph Lauren, and then talk about the Olympics.
Right.
And when that first started, when you first had dialogue, and what it's like to be a supplier and what that means for the company.
So my son and I launched Radcourt & Company in 2009. So I had been with Allen Edmonds for 13 years. And again, they were growing and looking to start sourcing offshore, and decided that it would be best that if, you know, I was going to stay in the shoe business, that, you know, I get back into it for myself and my son. And so from the beginning...
Is it just you and your son?
Yeah, just my
son. Has he pushed back at all on Radcourt & Company? Like, Dad, can it be Radcourt & Son? Because if I was your son, and I was going to... And I don't want to cause any family strife.
Right.
But and if your son's listening, I apologize. But at some point, I'm like, hey, Dad, the Radcourt & Company is nice. But you know what? Radcourt & Son has a certain ring. But you haven't really considered
He hasn't really asked me that question. I mean, maybe one day that'll come up. But right now, he's okay with Radcourt & Company.
Being part of a company?
Since he's Radcourt, everybody else is company. So
well played, sir.
He's all right with that.
He's already covered.
Exactly.
In fact, he can claim himself as the primary
Radcourt. That's exactly
Radcourt.
Right. And who would call him out on that?
Nobody. Right. And it's like, yeah, Dad, he's already had some businesses.
Right.
He's more of a consultant. I see where you're going with that. So, sorry to interrupt, but how did you start getting involved with Ralph Lauren, and how did that whole thing start?
So when we launched Radcourt & Company, I have an old friend here in the Portland area, Jamie, who works and contracts with Ralph Lauren on the product development side. And so she approached us right from the beginning and wanted us to be part of, you know, their vendor list. And so from the beginning, we started making shoes for them back in 2009 and continue today.
So when you say making for them, are they branded under their line?
Yeah, under their name. So all contract private label is the customer's name and not the Radcourt.
So if people see Ralph Lauren different areas of footwear, some of those are actually from Radcourt.
That's right, exactly.
Have you met Ralph Lauren?
No, I haven't.
He's like 90, but he looks like he's like 38, and he looks like he's always stepped off a year. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
All those guys, not only Ralph Lauren, but the other, you know, guy who's 70 or 80, and he's like one of the Kardashian. Who am I talking about? He's a big fashion designer. God, I shouldn't make so many Kardashian references because people are going to think I watch the Kardashians, which...
That's right. We are going to think that.
It stays on PBS on my TV. I'm telling you. It's all about educational TV. But, yeah, all those guys seem like, you know, I don't know how they do it. It's like they, I'm sure they have a team of people doing the hair and makeup, And, you know,
oh, yeah.
My team is working on liposuction, and they're working on other things.
Drill
but
bits.
What a great brand Ralph Lauren is in Polo sure and all is. The stuff they've done.
Yeah, fantastic. Wow. Iconic, right, as
yeah,
far as American
yeah.
brand.
Yeah, and again, I don't wear a lot of that because, again, it's beyond my price point, but I certainly admire it. So how did the first discussion happen? Was it Ralph Lauren that got the Olympic contract, and then you as a supplier, are you supplying footwear? And then talk about what that
right.
means.
So Ralph Lauren has the contract to supply, they call it, they refer to it as opening and closing uniforms. So both ceremonies. And yeah, they approached us. So Jamie approached me a year, it was a year in April and in 2015. And we sat and she laid out this plan where they're asking us to provide the shoes, their boat shoes, for the Olympic team and for distribution.
How do they decide boat shoes versus athletic footwear and boat shoes, I think? By the way, I just got a boat. notice to Deb, when you're thinking the birthday present, July 27th.
Oh, yes, I'm making notes.
Yeah, I have a boat.
Oh.
I mean...
So you need some boat shoes, maybe.
Yes. And, you know, entering the Mediterranean season. I'm actually fairly big in Monte Carlo. Have
yes.
you ever been to Monte Carlo?
No, I haven't.
Oh, wow. Monaco, the principality. I was there a little while ago, and I actually rode around the Formula One track. And it's so fancy there.
Nice.
It is super fancy. And I'm not kidding. I was really in Monaco. And it was like, it's like this tiny little... They call it a principality, but it's like no bigger than Portland.
Really?
And it's a country. And it was where Prince Rainier, and it was like, yeah. And again, I felt a little out of place. It Me was too. Like being in a giant Brooks Brothers.
Mm.
As uncomfortable as I was yesterday in a little Brooks Brothers, this was like 10 square miles of, sir, can we help you?
And are you like, lost?
Are you lost, sir? You're in this building. And it's like, no, I'm in Monte Carlo. I'm in Monaco. So... But how was footwear chosen as the category versus athletic? It was because of it was Ralph Lauren's business, and they wanted to make sure it stayed consistent with their brand?
I can't answer that question because I wasn't involved in a decision.
Right, they but you're just, happy because
yeah,
you're footwear.
Exactly, because it's shoes we make. It's the type of shoe we make, and so it worked out fine for us. I would say this, that they wanted something very traditional, and they wanted handmade as we make them.
And American-made. There were scandals in past Olympics where parts of uniforms were made outside of the U.S.
Right.
So I think there's a real conscious effort going forward.
Sure. Yeah, they asked that every component of the shoe come from the United States. So that was a challenge in itself
right.
to find every piece of the shoe.
How many U.S. athletes qualify for opening and closing ceremonies, and how big of a universe do you coaches, and do you do staff or trainers or people just hang on, or is it just specifically athletes get the uniform?
From what I understand, the total pairs for athletes and officials, and it's Paralympics as well, is a little over 1,100 pairs. So that was, we shipped those by the middle. We had to complete shipping those by the middle of February. So I don't know how many of those are officials versus athletes.
And this is for the upcoming Summer Games.
Yeah, for Summer Game in Brazil, exactly.
Any chance you're going down there, Mike?
No, not going to Brazil.
You're not? No. Check on the 1,100 shoes, no. making sure they're all good.
Everybody's good with them. I would have heard if they were not good.
I'm sure they're great, but they've been having a little bit of trouble down there in terms of water, in terms yeah. of the mosquito. What's it?
Zika.
It's like, hopefully the games come together. And so all of, I'm sure Ralph Lauren kind of brought all of the materials for the opening, and I'm sure they have a system when athletes check in. Here's your ceremony gear
yep.
and so we shirts,
had the sizes.
Jackets, and everyone had to provide their sizes.
Right. So we had sizes for the shoes. So for women's, we started at 5, went all the way up to size 16, and on the men's, from a size 6 all the way up to 18.
Are women's sizes and men's different? Is this another
yeah,
scandal?
Sure. No.
Why? Why can't we use the same numerology, the same system? So
well, we do. So an 8.5 woman just happens to be a narrower shoe than ours, but we still buy 8.5, and they buy 8.5.
Oh, so it's a width issue, but an 8.5 length is the same in women's.
No, it isn't.
That's my point, Mike.
But there is a conversion from men's to women's. So if you're a size 9 women's, you would wear a size 7 men's. So there is a conversion.
Well, yeah, because it would naturally be a two-unit increment conversion. How could I even question why? Everyone should know that. In fact, I'm sure there's an app. I'm sure the men's to women's app. But, the shoe business, if you guys could figure out the sizing and if you could start pricing more for big guy shoes, I can really help this industry. Don't you think, Deb?
Oh, sure.
I think we've made some inroads here.
I love it.
Okay. So we've got Mike Rancourt here. They make quality shoes, Rancourt and in Company, their right. website. So do you sell online at rancourtandcompany.com?
We do. Direct to consumer.
So is all the business, or how do you feel about those guys at Zappos? Are they bad, evil, bad for the shoe business?
No, I think they're great for the shoe business.
Yeah, but you don't have distribution online through someone like Zappos.
No, that's again a very different business than ours.
The big warehouse and
exactly.
Yeah, Kevin, I'm a guy. I'm a Zappos guy. The way you said that, Mike, is all very Sir Sam's Club and Zappos. The way you said that, see, that's I'm not a gentleman buyer.
We're learning a lot about you today.
Well, I am sharing a lot because it's self awareness and maybe it's just a little bit of I've. Gotten to a point where I just accept the fact. The Brooks Brothers guys are like, sir, you need to go over to Dunkin' Donuts, sir. You need to leave. And now our guest, Mike Rancourt, is like, no. Zappos, we are not. But they're a good business. Again,
very good business.
It's not your distribution
channel.
It's not
channel, our distribution, exactly.
But as a business, their customer service and their system is
incredible.
Let me ask you a question. This qualifies in the fastball. We don't do a lot of 60-minute stuff here, Deb. Do we ever?
No.
But let me ask you what for us would be a hardball question. Okay, we've got our guest Mike Rancourt here. So since your family's been involved with shoe making for many many years,
yep.
generations.
Yep,
and. There's a history between originally with your dad selling to Quoddy and then working with Cole Haan and then
Elements.
Right. Yep. And then working now as a producer for our good friends at Ralph Lauren and recently this new company. Here's the fastball question for Mike Rancourt. It seems like there's a pattern. In the shoe business, it feels like there's a pattern where building the business into a quality product and then right. since you missed the Warren Buffett train for the $1 billion, you've put together in smaller increments. And I'm not going to ask specific financial numbers, but you missed out. And I'm sure the whole family gets together every Thanksgiving and going, damn, we didn't get the Warren Buffett money. Damn it. And so. You've sold a number of companies, and is that just the nature of the business? And what's the future for Rancourt, whether it's in this category of shoes, the gentleman footwear category, as you kind of alluded to, and at what point does this company move on into a bigger company? And then when you come back in 3 years, and it's your son has a new company, and
I've sold to Warren Buffett.
Yes, and you've sold to Warren Buffett. It'll be his final right. legacy. The right. last time he made a deal with a shoe company in Maine, he gets screwed.
And then he gets screwed a second time.
And a second time, company. It'll be a nice bookend to the Warren Buffett legacy. And
but it won't cost him $1 billion to do this.
No, and at this point, I mean, Warren Buffett has so many billions of dollars. I'm sure the sting is gone.
Exactly.
But what does the future look like for both the business and the category?
Well, the future is incredible today because of the internet. So direct-to-consumer is a much better business than being a contract manufacturer. And so I think, to get to your point, as a contract manufacturer, and you start to develop nice accounts, but sooner or later, one or two of them become the dominant player in your business. And at some point, they're asking you, because you're making a certain amount of pairs for them, they're asking you to join them, or that they're going to go find somebody to make the shoes that you're making.
You're almost a victim of your own success.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Where you have so much product, so much quantity, right. that they want to be more vertical and say, the profit that you're making selling to us, we want to capture in this vertical.
Right. Plus, they can control their source at that point, right? When they buy the factory. So that's why we ended up, my dad did it, and then I've done it twice. And again, to start to launch a brand, the Rancourt brand, 20 years ago would have been incredibly challenging because there's no real direct-to-consumer. And that's the internet today. So we have a very loyal customer who likes our story, likes the authenticity of what we do.
The gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
What about buying things? As a size 14 guy,
yeah.
I'm at like the top end, so I just order 14s, and if they're a little tight, I deal with it. There's not a lot of elasticity when you get to the upper range. But what about direct-to-consumer with sizing? Because with your leather footwear, you know, there's variables with weather, humidity, size.
Right.
Is that an issue, or have you just figured, you know, if somebody orders online, is there some resistance to say, I'm going to buy a $700 pair of Rancourt & Company shoes, and I'm size 9.5, but sometimes I'm a 10.
Right.
How do you deal with those kind of variables?
What we see a lot of is the fact that, you know, most people have a dominant foot, like a dominant hand, and so they'll actually order from us a 10 left foot or right foot, and then a 9.5 on the other foot. So we get a lot of that. So people have actually gone out and had their feet measured and come back and order two different sizes from us.
So they go to one of those places I shop at. They use their little footwear measuring thing.
That's called a Brannick device. So they use the Brannick device. Then they call us.
And they say, thank you, Sports Authority. You're going to go out of business in a few weeks. I'm going to take my measurements. I have never heard in my life, the idea, the concept, the possibility of ordering different size shoes. Have you?
I have, yes. I've dated a couple of guys, in fact, in the past.
Recently?
Who had.
Recently?
In the past.
Deb, you're married. What the heck? What? So you've dated other guys?
They had, like you said, a half inch or a half size bigger on one size of the feet. So they had to buy two pairs of shoes, one in the half and one in the upper. So it's very
and then they
interesting.
Just, they mix and match.
Yeah.
That would be a volume sales technique that other companies would use. Gentlemen wouldn't go daily double. I don't think you'd expect that at the Rancourt. It's like, oh, you have different size? Well, we're offering the daily double. And so do you want?
Buy a 10 and buy a 9.5.
Yeah.
And then throw out the other two.
Yeah.
And how about you, Sally? Any foot issues that you have on sizing or, you know?
Not personally, but I have heard that people buy... Like what Deb said.
Different sizes.
Yeah. You got to be comfortable, right?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a go-along-with-it kind of guy. But, you know, I never knew that option existed. And if my feet hurt, like they did this thing. And, again, these are childhood memories that I've tried to suppress. But every time I went to the little hush puppy place and I was going back to school, you know, they put in your feet and then the person would put the thumb on your toes. Does this hurt? Can you feel this? And I'd be like, oh, no, feels okay. And that was it till Easter. And if my foot grew, tough it out. And, I never knew the option. If I ever said that to my folks, I'm going to need to go offset sizing. My dad would hit me upside the head and go, what the hell are you talking about? Get a couple of size 9s. What are you, a goofball?
That's funny.
But the footwear business to me, honest, I'm being serious here. It is a fascinating business because I do believe – I don't know if this is in a kind of a metaphysical thing or an existential thing, but it's the grounding point for the human experience. It's what you put on your feet. It's literally and figuratively your contact point with the earth, which could be, you know, you're in a marketing company, so some of this hyperbole you may want to use. You may want to call it down over to your marketing, but it's the grounding point of humanity in the earth. What do you think?
That's a really good point.
But it's not just a covering, and it's not just an aesthetic thing. It is, you know, you need traction. You need
you need
support,
on your
arch. And if you have, anyone has had foot problems, I once had Fanta plus, you know, what's it called? It's not Fanta. That's a great orange soda. It's like I had a foot arch thing. I used to play a lot of basketball. And when you have foot problems, there's nothing worse. It's like you could be a giant oak tree as strong as, you know, titanium, and you get a little thing going on with your feet, and you come down hard.
Yeah.
So with your shoes, I'm sure they're cushiony and soft, too, because we've talked about leather and soles.
Right.
But
so we have rubber soles and leather soles, and then inside we have cushion inside as well.
What would be good footwear for me, Mike? Now that we've talked and you've kind of like, you know, what should I look at? I have a boat. So are they slip-on boat shoes?
For you, we'd make a Velcro pair.
Velcro. God, there's something so sad about that. And the way you just said that, there's so much.
You're describing something of ease. And so there's nothing better than Velcro.
Right. I just don't want to believe I'm in the Velcro category. My self image will not allow me to go full Velcro. Maybe in about 10 or 15 years, I'll just kind of go, what the heck, I'm full Velcro, and I'll show up at the bingo tournament. But I just don't see that now. There's got to be something between me getting kicked out of Brooks Brothers and Velcro. Shouldn't there be? Doesn't there seem like there should be, Deb?
There are actually boat shoes that, so on the shoes that you're wearing, they have Gore on the side, that's that elastic band.
Yeah.
So they're actually boat shoes made with the Gore rubber elastic band, and so you can actually slip them onto your feet, and you don't have to tie them.
Yeah, the whole tie thing, I think, you know, shoelaces were invented hundreds of years ago when footwear first kind of became mass-produced. It just feels like the technology is come away. You know, pretty soon there'll be an app that closes the shoe, right? I mean, all kidding aside, people have put technology in athletic footwear. They try to put speed and they try to put pressure sensors, but it won't be long before upscale gentleman shoes will. You know, if you're going to say with tonality Velcro, I'm going to say with tonality gentleman shoes made by Rand Court and Company. But it won't be long before there is some technology, some chip, some it may not be electric tying, but you know, technology is everywhere now. Wearable technology is the big thing.
Right.
Have you guys thought about that, or is that
not at all?
No. no thought whatsoever. Just no, that's a crazy idea. We make fine shoes. We've got Mike Rancourt here in the next couple of minutes. Talk a little bit about being a small business owner in Maine. And, you know, you've owned and operated a number of family businesses over the last few decades. And clearly it's a high-end specialty niche. But how do you see Maine as a kind of a business environment for Rancourt and Company in making your shoes?
So I'm from Lewiston. I strongly believe in community. And
right.
We certainly had opportunities to move and start somewhere else, but elected to stay in Lewiston Auburn, and still feel strongly about that today. I mean, certainly the business environment can always improve. Costs can be challenging, especially electrical costs these days. And then you got the new ACA rules from the government. We have our challenges. But I come back to this is why it's so important that direct-to-consumer become the bulk of our sales. I mean, that's where we have to go, and that'll make the difference for us in the future.
How do people find, by the way, anyone listening that's interested in quality footwear, please go to rancourtandcompany.com. They also are active on Twitter, which is rancourtco for company, and also Instagram. So how do typically, you know, the internet is super effective for message delivery, but how do you connect Rancourt and Company with the gentlemen who are your audience, whether it's advertising or outreach? Because if you don't find them and they find you,
right,
then the match doesn't happen. And then once the match happens, it's an effective platform to sell shoes. But right, how do you make sure the match happens?
So it's about forums, and so in the internet world, in that sphere, there are many forums about clothing and dress, and then there's this Made in America movement that has been pretty strong in you know, this generation from mid-20s to mid-30s, and so they actually seek out factories like us, manufacturers like us, and then once we produce something, they're very loyal customers. I mean, that's the thing that I find with our business today. I mean, you know, they're buying not one pair, they're buying four, five, six pairs a year, or at least in the 2-year period. So they're very loyal to us.
Are there other businesses that are adjunct to shoes? Like we joked about belts, because I love a good belt, but
sure,
they're made out of leather, and they're, yeah, you know. Do you have other areas that are kind of complementary to footwear?
Sure. So we also sell U.S. made socks. And then we do sell belts. We sell knit hats, you know, all made in USA. So if you go on our site, it's the statement is really about, you know, crafting here in the United States and selling items from done really well from the United States.
And everyone should go to RandCourtandCompany.com. And relative to e-commerce, you know, your experience looking back from the 60s, 70s and with your dad,
yeah.
Back then there really was no internet.
That's right.
So you've seen the progression of the industry from physical distribution to specialty stores and chain stores into direct-to-consumer. What some advice you may have to somebody in a different business category on how to kind of maximize the opportunity with direct-to-consumer in a business model?
So it's a long story here, but you know, one of the most important things is that your product be authentic, you know, that it has a story behind it, and that it's available to be able to try. We ship shoes and people try them on. If they don't fit, they send them back. So it's really being as genuine as you can be with your consumer and then being loyal to them along the entire path of buying a pair of shoes or whatever it is that you're selling.
You know, and again, this is a serious question. I know Deb will snicker, but any thought of getting into the bowling shoe category? Because honest to God, bowling shoes look sort of cool. They're retro. Right. It's kind of a Pulp Fiction kind of thing.
Yeah.
Certainly, it wouldn't be a high-end red carpet kind of thing.
No.
But I love a good bowling shoe. Deb, I've seen you wear some into the studio.
For sure. They're comfy.
I don't know if you just left with them. You know, that may be like, oh, I forgot. You know, I bowled a couple lanes and, oh, you know, people chase you out in the parking lot. God, but that may be a big market, too. And plus, they're numbered. So you immediately.
But they have laces, most of them.
Again.
There you go.
No, there's a lot of Velcro bowling shoes.
Oh,
well so
there you go.
Yeah, that's a good Velcro. That's a good Velcro category.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in today because.
Great to be here.
Yeah. When Sully came in and said, hey, we should really have Mike Rancourt, and he's the co-owner of Rancourt & Company, they're shoe crafters. I knew that you may come into the interview with a little bias against my Merrell footwear and my Zappos account and the fact that I couldn't even get into Brooks Brothers, but clearly you have a business that's been committed to Maine. Clearly you guys do great work. And
thanks.
I think it really represents the state well, and the fact that you're working with Ralph Lauren. And all kidding aside, when the Olympic ceremonies happen, and it's one of the most watched television events around the world, particularly the opening ceremonies, and we see about 1,100 athletes and coaches representing the United States, I know I will feel a sense of pride knowing that you and I met. And knowing that footwear and the shoes that every Olympic athlete is wearing as they do the opening ceremonies came from a Maine company made by Maine workers and sourced with materials here in the U.S.
That's right.
I think that's a great sense of pride for you, your company, everyone in Maine, and for the U.S. And
here, here.
Yeah, it's an honor meeting you and kind of being connected in a small way to the stuff that you're doing. So as you expand the business, and if you do get into the Velcro, my category, we would love to have you come back. And I really appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. We've had Mike Rancourt here. Please, if you're interested in quality footwear, go to rancourtandcompany.com. They're also visible on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. 100.5 FM, also online at TideSmartRadio.com. We will be back next week. Thank you.